If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 14 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast, and I'm going to be joined this week by Minnesota Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins. I've got to know Kirk very well over recent years. We've done a lot of NFL UK live tours together. We've done many events on stage together. One of the nicest guys you could ever meet in the NFL. And Kirk actually grew up as a Chicago Bears fan, so he's now the Vikings quarterback, and he finds himself in the same division as the team he grew up supporting. Before we get to Kirk's story, however, I just need to get over some technical problems.
Oh,
hang on, my Alexa's just gone off. Hang on, did you hear that? Hang on, Alexa, stop. Great start. Leave that in. Leave all that in. Brilliant. Kirk, let's start with growing up and your I guess whether football was a part of your Sundays. I did a podcast recently with Josh Norman. His dad was a pastor. I know the church would have been a big thing for you on Sundays. So was there any NFL for you growing up?
Oh, yeah. We were usually racing home from church to get to either our own sporting events or to go watch sporting events. So I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and the Chicago Bears were the team that we all followed. And we were racing home from church to make sure we caught the start of their game.
It's funny how it works out then. You end up in the same division as the Bears. So you're a Bears fan as a young boy?
I was a Bears fan. And it's interesting how, you know, as time passes, you kind of have to move on and find a new team. So whether it was, playing for the Redskins, that became the team. And then now with the Vikings, that's the team. But like you said, with the Redskins, it was a little easier because we weren't playing the Bears twice every year. Now we're going to Chicago every single year. So it's bringing up a lot of memories of growing up watching the Bears.
When did you first start playing? And were you always a quarterback?
Well, I started playing flag football when I was in fourth grade. And the way they did the rules then was you had to rotate every position. So I played just as much quarterback that season as I did offensive line, which was frustrating at a time. But looking back, I think it's a great way to learn the game and get the foundation. And then from there, I ended up playing tackle at the age of 12 for the very first time. And then it was tackle football all the way through after that. And I kind of liked the fact that I had a progression going from flag first for a couple of seasons and then into tackle. And even then, tackle was based on your weight. So you could only play with kids who were within about 10 pounds of how much you weighed. And then eventually you join your school team. And that was just, you know, everybody playing together.
That would be useful if they had that 10-pound range in the NFL. Make your life a lot easier on Sundays.
It would make the game a lot safer. I wouldn't be complaining because I would certainly be someone on the bottom end who would benefit.
Let's talk about high school. So as you went through high school, and I read you broke your ankle in your junior year. Did that just mean you had to work a little bit harder? Was it not necessarily the smoothest route to college football? Did it change how you had to get to that next level?
It did. It was my very first varsity football game. So the highest level you can play before playing in college. I had never played a varsity football game. So to get hurt in the very first game was discouraging. I mean, I had dreamt of playing varsity football all my years growing up. But, football is a game of adversity. And if anything, it taught me what I was going to be facing down the road, that not everything's going to go your way. And you've got to be ready to deal with it and move on and be tough. And so a phrase that has stuck with me is tough times don't last, tough people do. And I've applied that to my football career and outside of football. But certainly that moment was a big one to learn that lesson. And fortunately, you know, I was still had my final year of high school to be able to get recruited. I stayed healthy during that season and was able to play well enough to get some interest from schools. But it was a little frustrating going through my junior year knowing that I wasn't getting recruited.
And you end up at Michigan State. So when you look back on your college career, I guess you had to be patient early. You were backing up Brian Hoyer. What gives you the most pride when you look at your college career there?
Well, when I arrived at Michigan State, and it was Coach D'Antonio, my coach's very first year, Michigan State had not had a winning season in about 5 years. And so to go from 5 years without a winning season to my last couple seasons there, we had double-digit wins both years. I found that to be quite a turnaround. And to just be a part of that, to participate in that journey, I was just – you know, it was a thrill to be able to see the change in the program. And then even after I left the program, to watch them win a Big Ten championship and win a Rose Bowl, you know, that was a great moment to look back and see the journey that we had taken to help get the program to where it ended up.
Is it right that one of the Big Ten championships you shared?
Yeah, I won a Big Ten championship in 2010 and my 2011 we played in the first ever Big Ten championship game, and we lost that game on a final play. The quarterback, the other team was a guy named Russell Wilson. You may have heard of him. and then 2013, after I had graduated, they went Michigan State, won that Big Ten championship game, which got them into the Rose Bowl. So really to be a part of that, you know, Big Ten championship conversation in several seasons was no small accomplishment from where Michigan State was when we arrived there back in 2007.
Cousins was drafted by Washington in the fourth round of 2012 selection process. It was the same year they chose Robert Griffin III in the first round with the second overall pick. It begs the question of what Cousins must have been thinking about when he was heading into the NFL. Turns out he hit the jackpot of coaching staffs.
Well, it seemed like a dead end to go to Washington. It didn't really fit. And I would tell people that there are 32 teams in the NFL, I thought that going to Washington would probably be the 32nd most likely place for me to end up. So that goes to show how surprised I was to be drafted by Washington. That being said, shortly after I was picked and I was able to kind of process where I was going and the coaching staff I was going to, I realized I had Mike Shanahan as my head coach, who had coached people like John Elway and Steve Young and Joe Montana. And then his son, Kyle Shanahan, was going to be the offensive coordinator, who I learned was young, but a very respected play caller in the NFL. My quarterback coach was going to be Matt LaFleur, who was from the same state that I grew up in, the state of Michigan. And then the tight ends coach was a guy named Sean McVay. And at the time, I didn't know a lot about Sean McVay, but looking back, it was such a blessing to be able to be coached by all of those people. And as a result, Washington was the best place for me because you see as a player how important coaches are in the life of a player in terms of their development. So I hit the jackpot when it comes to getting coached by the right people.
Yeah, when you list those names, did you, and we hear players all the time say, "Oh, I was trying to be a sponge. I was trying to soak it up." Did you kind of recognize that early? And yes, you wanted to be on the field, but you had to use this to look at the bigger picture. I've been on the NFL UK live tours with you. I've seen you on our tour bus picking the brains of Kurt Warner, always wanting to learn, always trying to get that nugget of information that's going to take your game to the next level. Did you recognize that early when you were around those coaches?
Well, I wish I recognized it even more than I did. I remember the day I was picked, my dad made the point that, "Kirk, you're about to be coached by Mike Shanahan, and he's no slouch when it comes to quarterback coaching." So we knew it right away when I was boarding the flight to Washington to begin my journey there that I was walking into a good situation as far as coaches are concerned. I don't think we could know that three of his assistants would go on to be some of the most well-known head coaches in the NFL. I wish I had known that at the time. I probably would have been even more of a sponge. But looking back, I was so fortunate. I did learn so much, and it was great to get two seasons with them to learn from them. I wish I had had more, though.
Mm. When you're a professional athlete, it's different from people like me who are looking at it from the outside. So you probably had no problem with this, but how do you avoid having the mindset, okay, I'm just a backup? Because from 2012 to 2014, you were in and out sporadically, but you were the reserve quarterback. But how do you make sure you guard against that? Because that's not the right attitude to have, is it? I'm sure.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so many players in this league, it takes time to become the player that you want to be or that you're expected to be. And I wasn't ready to play when I came in as a rookie. And so to be a backup, I think, was a really good thing. If anything, I wish I had been thrown in the hadn't been thrown in the fire as early as I was, because there were some struggles early on. But you have to do it. You know, you have to get thrown in there and learn on the fly and make mistakes. And I had been a backup for two seasons at Michigan State, and after learning for 2 years, then got to play for three at Michigan State. And the first year I started was a little bumpy, and then the second and third year were much stronger. And my NFL career has followed that script somewhat. You know, you sit for a while, you go in, you have some struggles, and you start to smooth things out. And that's just kind of a natural progression in whatever you do. But I think sitting and watching is a good, healthy thing. And it was necessary for me. And I had seen in college how much it helped to sit and watch. And I think, you know, to do it again in the pros was in a way accepted and understood that that's part of the journey for many players.
Does the learning accelerate when you play week in and week out? So when you get to 2015 and you're the every week starter, you lead Washington to the division title, you get to the playoffs, going from week to week where you're in there learning, whether it be from a good play or a mistake, does it speed up the learning, do you think?
Yeah, I do think once you're in playing, you know, that takes a whole nother level of development as a player. I mean, the fans see Sunday, and there's no doubt that Sunday is what it's all about. But when you're truly going to be playing all 70 snaps on Sunday, your process from Sunday night at the end of the previous game all the way through the week to get to the following Sunday for kickoff, there's just so much involved physically to get your body recovered and ready, mentally to learn a new game plan, leadership-wise to get your teammates where they need to be, and yourself where you need to be. It just takes so much. You know, the media obviously is at a whole nother level when you're playing as opposed to when you're not playing. So you process through all that, and then you do it over and over and over 16 straight weeks. And you're going to have a bit of a roller coaster ride. There's going to be good days and bad days, but you learn what that's like. And if you can come out the end at the other side of the season, having had a great year, you're going to get the chance to do it again. And fortunately, I've been able to do it the last five seasons. And now it's kind of become a way of life. And to go back to not playing or to be done playing would be foreign now, because this is what I've come to know as the way I spend every season. I'm hoping I can do it for several more seasons up ahead.
Now, working in the media, producing this podcast, anchoring on Sky Sports, I get to ask a lot of questions. But I've never asked a question that has become iconic, a question that has come to represent a mantra that Kirk Cousins himself unintentionally created. So I have to ask.
You like that? You like that?
That, of course, wasn't me. It was the voice of Kirk Cousins after his match-winning performance against Tampa Bay in 2015 when Washington pulled off an incredible comeback from 24 points down.
Yeah, it was a funny moment. You know, it was a crazy game, and we were down 24-0, and then we ended up winning 31-30. And in just the excitement of the moment, the thrill of the moment, I came back through the tunnel of our stadium to walk into the locker room, and you know, pointed at a local person in the media and just said, "You like that?" And you know, it was just a lot of emotion, passion, and I had no idea there was a camera there that was actually recording. I had no idea that it was going to go out on the internet. And when I got done with the end of the game and the media and all the things I had to do, I went out to the parking lot to meet my family, and they had already seen it on the internet and were asking me about it. So, and yeah, as you mentioned, we're now, you know, 5-6 years later, and we're still talking about it. So it was quite a moment that was completely unplanned.
Well, you've always been good for a soundbite, because obviously a year later you got the "How Do You Like Me Now" with Scott McLuhan. I mean, it's maybe both incidents are just a reminder that you live in a goldfish bowl, and you probably always have to be aware of that.
Sure. No, there's absolutely, cameras much of the time, and with social media now, there's an expectation that people are going to have access to your life beyond just the football game or the football season. And, you know, it's the world we live in, and you take the good with the bad. There's so many positives of being in that fishbowl too. And so if ever the publicity gets to be frustrating, I think of all the positives that come with it too. And you feel a lot better.
Let's talk about a couple of aspects of your career. Franchise tagged twice. How did you feel? Let me ask this. Did you feel different the first time and then different again the second time, or did you just accept both and just keep moving on?
Yeah, it was pretty, for me, not a lot of feeling. You know, it was a bit, it's right. A business. Pro sports is a business. This was the natural business step or move for the team to make, for the player to make. And I knew that if I played football well, it would all work out, and it just wasn't going to be an issue. And I knew that if I didn't play football well, I probably didn't deserve to be franchise tagged in the first place. So my focus was more understanding that, hey, the long term will take care of itself, but in the short term, I've got to play football well. I've got to do my part. I've got to make this franchise tag have been worth it. And so my focus was just kind of on the near term of that game, that season. And knowing that if that got taken care of, everything else would work itself out. So not a lot of reason for me to see it any other way.
When you're in that, and it is a business, and players need to treat it a business the same way the owners treat it a business, are you purely looking after yourself there? Or are you thinking, actually, we can push the envelope a little bit here and change things? So when you joined the Vikings, 3 years, all $84 million fully guaranteed. Now, we've not seen every player get fully guaranteed since then, but we've seen big chunks of money going to players in terms of guaranteed money. So maybe your deal did have an impact on that. Are you kind of thinking outside of just your own world there?
You know, I would say that question is probably better for my agent, because it was his idea to take that approach, to structure the contract that way. Once you hire the agent, you kind of let him do his job. And I just said, okay, sounds good to me. As long as I'm, you know, earning market value and it's a fair contract, then I'm good with it. So I think all in all, it was a good contract for our situation. It fit what we were wanting to do. It even, you know, allowed us to take maybe a hair less in the average per year, which then opens up a little bit more salary cap space. So, all in all, I think it was good for us. Whether or not other people saw that or wanted to follow that model or teams would follow that model, you know, I guess that the ball was in their court at that point. But it was a great, great situation for us. And we were thrilled to be able to do an extension and hopefully be in Minnesota, finish our career as a Viking. That's really where our goals lie, making sure we play well enough to stay there and finish there and win a lot of games.
We'll be back with Kirk Cousins after this short break on the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Hi, I'm Nat Coombs, host of the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Gotta love that title, where 3 times a week I'm joined by the very best from across the ESPN galaxy, getting you up to speed on all the key NFL news and views that you need to know about. And we've got plenty of your favorite NFL UK voices dropping by as well. Carlson, J-Bell, Isaacs, Bandini, and of course, Reynolds, all the big guns, quite frankly. So just search the Nat Coombs Show wherever you get your podcasts. We look forward to having you.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Neil Reynolds podcast and my chat with Minnesota Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins. Now, there's a great quote from the legendary Vince Lombardi. He once said that a tie in the NFL is like kissing your sister. In other words, no team, players or coach ever wants to tie a game. But for Kirk Cousins, two of the greatest games he's ever played in were the dreaded sister kisses. At Wembley with Washington in 2016, tying with the Bengals, followed by a tie with the Packers at Lambeau Field in 2018.
I will say so those games were fun, though, and I had a blast playing in them, especially the one in London. But it was a weird feeling. Like you said, kissing your sister on the flight home, you don't even know what to feel.
Yeah, I remember running onto the field after that game to see if we could get somebody from Washington to come and join us on Sky Sports. And the PR guy, Zena, then was like, this feels like a loss. This feels like a loss because you'd missed a field goal in overtime.
Right.
Actually, Daniel Carlson missed a couple of field goals in the one at Lambeau Field, including one in overtime. How do you feel about that when you're the quarterback? Because I know it's a team game, but what's that like afterwards?
Yeah, I do think there's always a an understanding, certainly, of the final result, obviously. But then you do kind of look at what was your role. You know, what was your role in that loss or win or tie? And in both those ties, I think there's an awareness of, you know, I'm playing well. I saw the field well. I made good decisions. And if you did that, if you carried your part the best you could, I think you walk off the field with your head held high. I remember playing the Bengals because it had gotten to a point where we thought we were going to win and the Bengals thought they were going to lose. To tie can have a different emotional swing for both sides. I think the Bengals were a little bit relieved that they had tied. We were a little bit upset that we had tied because of where the expectation had gotten by the last play of the game. So, you know, similar to when you tie against the Packers. So, but in those games, I mean, there were emotional swings both ways, and there were moments where it looked like we were going to lose in both those games. So sometimes you look back and you say, hey, tying isn't the worst thing. And it was about what we did the rest of the year. And unfortunately, both those years, we finished 8-7-1, and we're just a game short of going to the playoffs. And so those ties do come back to bite you late in the year if you don't get the job done in other games.
Let's talk about the playoffs then. 2019 season, you have a very good season with the Minnesota Vikings. Then you go into the Superdome, one of the toughest places to play football. Let me just show you because, Kirk, this game gave me a lot of satisfaction. I'm supposed to be neutral on Sunday nights. Let's just show you how we covered the end of this game on Sky Sports.
Cousins throws, passes, caught for the win. Kyle Rudolph and the Vikings are moving on.
This is Kirk Cousins, 6-30 against teams with winning records.
Exactly. Yep.
1-4 against playoff teams in 2019.
All those ghosts.
7-16 against primetime games.
Any others?
No, that's it. They're all in the bin. He's buried a lot of them.
I'm more happy for you than anybody because I know how much you like Kirk Cousins.
That's my mate. So in case you're wondering, that was me ripping up my notes in the Sky Sports studio, sat alongside Brian Baldinger, Sean Gale, Jeff Reinbold, as Kirk himself ripped up his own career narrative in the Superdome.
There you go, Kirk. I mean, it was great to see you get that big win because you do sometimes get criticized. First of all, let's talk about that win and then about life as an NFL quarterback. What was it like at the end of that game? I guess it's different when you're on the road as well because it must have felt like you could hear a pin drop there.
Yeah, that was a unique feeling, especially, Neil, I remember that was the loudest game I've ever played in. I mean, going back to college, playing in front of 110,000 people at a couple stadiums in college, the Superdome in a playoff game, I know now why it was so difficult to win there because communication was as difficult or more difficult than it's ever been for me on a football field. So, you know, I couldn't believe how well our defense played to limit such a great, sane offense. You know, they didn't have the same type of day offensively that they had been having. That gave us a chance to stay in the game. And then Adam Thielen made a great catch in overtime to get us down there. And then Kyle Rudolph made an unbelievable catch to win the game. And, you know, it's pretty easy to say that was probably the biggest victory so far of my career. And, you know, now we got to get back to the playoffs and we got to win more once we get there. But it was an absolute thrill. And I appreciate you having my back all the way in London.
Always got that. And I guess it does serve as motivation for 2020, because you are a team that's there or thereabouts. It's getting over that, like making that final climb to the top of the mountain.
Yes, I think so. I think we you know, took a step by winning a playoff game this past year in a tough atmosphere, but you don't line up just to get to the playoffs. You line up to get all the way to the finish and win the Super Bowl. And that's where, you know, our objective is, and we've got a long ways to go to get there, but certainly, you know, you raise the bar after last season to see if we can get further. But, you know, it's hard to talk about January when you look at the schedule and you see that we have Green Bay at home week right. one, and you realize, boy, it's hard to look past week one, knowing that there's a lot of football to be played and just about anything can happen.
Yeah, and I would not expect you to do anything other than push yourself on. I've seen you're hard on yourself, right? I mean, we'll talk about critics in a second and life in the NFL, but you're hard on yourself. I read where you talked about you sometimes had trouble sleeping, you push yourself all the time. Are you kind of your biggest critic, and how do you balance that between not being too hard on yourself?
Yeah, I'm getting better at that, giving myself more grace and understanding that you know, you're going to have your ups and your downs. But I used to say that, you know, nobody who criticizes me is going to be harder on me than I'm going to be on me. So that was one way to kind of understand that, hey, whatever they write about me or say I'm not good enough to do this or that, you better believe that I'm already pushing myself to get past those hurdles long before anyone else is. But yeah, you continue to mature as a player and you learn, you know, the best ways to view yourself, to view your play, to view your struggles. And, you know, I think I'm in a really good place right now as far as my confidence, my belief, and just my general excitement to get this season underway and get going. Mm.
You do probably get a lot of things written about you, a lot of things said about you. I read a wonderful story when you were in Washington, you're playing golf at Congressional, and 85-year-old lady is telling you what you need to do to improve your game. There's different ways you can approach that. Do you look at it and think, okay, I'll use it as motivation, or are you pretty good at kind of completely shutting it out?
A little bit of both. I think it's healthy to just shut it out. I think it's healthy to say, look, the people who matter are my coaches, my teammates, whatever they're telling me and I'm learning from them. I need to apply that. And I don't really need another voice or an outside opinion to help me. You shouldn't need it. That being said, like you said, we live in a fishbowl, and it's difficult to go about your daily life realistically and completely be insulated from any narratives on the outside. And so when you do encounter one, and sometimes you do, sometimes you don't, but when you do, you obviously have to be mature enough to handle it. And if possible, say, all right, I heard this. I'm going to use this to help make me a better player and not make me worse. And that's certainly something that I even, you know, continue to get better at. And again, I think I'm in a really good place now as a player after starting for 5 years and going into my ninth season, just being able to handle criticism and handle coaching and use it really to get better as a player.
People ask me about guys that I go on tour with and around the NFL, around NFL UK Lives, and people have asked about you before. And I say, this is how I would describe you, as just a normal guy. And I don't think that's something you have to work at, but you are a starting quarterback in the NFL, a Pro Bowl quarterback in the NFL with millions of eyes on you every week. But you are a normal person. I mean, is that you haven't really changed as all the time I've known you. Is that important to you and to your family?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. It does mean something to me that would be true of me. And as I go on and hopefully win a lot more games and be a part of some great things, that would continue to be true of me. like you said, my family, you know, they would make sure that that's true of me as well, because they're not all that impressed with me. But and even as I raise my boys, I want my boys to become people who that is said of them, and that they don't view themselves as special or different because their dad is a professional athlete. And but yeah, I think it's important to be a question asker and to be interested in other people. And just because you throw a football for a living doesn't suddenly, you know, put you on some throne and make you better than other people.
So one thing my friendship with Kurt has taught me is how respectful he is of fellow quarterbacks. I've been fortunate enough to see him at close quarters on tour buses around the UK with Kurt Warner, and I've heard him talk with such praise for the likes of Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. He is a fully paid up member of the Quarterback Appreciation Club.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because the guys, when people say, who did you grow up watching? I would say Tom Brady. I would say Drew Brees, because I watched Drew quite a bit when he was in college. And so technically those are people that I watched as a kid, and yet they're still playing. So now they're viewed as my peers, especially now that I've been in the league for so long, and they're still playing. And I think that kind of makes for a unique dynamic, one of tremendous respect because of how I've always viewed them from a distance, but then also understanding that, you know, hey, I can't respect them too much where it affects my ability to go out and compete against them and win. But no, like you said, I've always had tremendous respect for so many great players in the NFL. I followed football for a long time, and someone like Kurt Warner, you know, was winning his the first Super Bowl he played in when I was in fifth grade. So I was young and playing flag football and just learning the game, and he was out winning a Super Bowl. So to go see him when we went to stuff in London and in the different cities, it was a thrill for me to be around him and just ask questions and learn.
So if you were a Tom Brady fan growing up, you didn't go full Big Ben and ask for something for your den, did you? Or do you have something signed by Tom Brady in your house?
You know, I probably have made the mistake of not asking for signed items enough. I think it'd be pretty cool to get to the end of my career and have a nice collection of people I played with, people I played against. And so I even made a point to my wife that this season I've got to do a better job of, you know, connecting with some guys, even on our own team with the Vikings, getting some things signed so that long-term I have some items that I can save for the long haul.
I think that gets in your head when you have children, probably, because you're from week to week just playing the games. And then you think about your legacy and think about, well, my kids might want to see this in 20, 30 years' time.
Absolutely. I can't wait to play. I want to play long enough for my boys to be old enough to go watch me play and really remember it. And I don't know if that's 6, 7, 8 years old, but they're 2.5 and 1 right now. So hopefully I've got a few more years in me, but I cannot wait to bring them around training camp practice and bring them through the locker room and just allow them to participate in the fun parts of the journey that have been such a thrill for my whole family. And I hope we can play long enough for them to be old enough to experience it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Last couple, Kirk. So this is a difficult one because you're right in the middle of it and you've got a lot of years ahead of you. But do you kind of think about, I don't know, maybe it's something that interests you away from football, whether it's things you like to do relaxing that might turn into something down the road. Do you kind of have in your mind, even if you don't share it right now, but do you have that big picture of what you're going to do moving forward?
Well, I'd be lying to you if I said those thoughts don't enter my mind. I mean, I'm a planner, so I like to think about, okay, where are we going and where would be a natural next step be? And if there is a natural next step, how can I, you know, in the off season, maybe be smart about connecting with people or starting to learn along those lines. But I don't really know what that is. I think there are options, which is good. It'll be good to have options. But I just try to continue to meet good people, to ask questions, you know, gather information of what people do, what they enjoy to do. And hopefully, you know, I want to be able to have flexibility, and I want to be able to be a dad and be involved in my boys' lives in a great way, help coach their teams and that kind of a thing. So schedule flexibility would be a great thing, but I wouldn't mind coming to work with you, Neil. Maybe you and I could commentate on football games, and I could go across the pond and spend some time in the UK. So I'll keep my mind open, and maybe broadcasting is where it is, and maybe it's overseas.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I was going to suggest that, but didn't want to appear too needy. So you said it first.
Awesome. Good to have options.
It's always good to have options. There's always a seat next to me for you, Kirk. Last one then. So quarterback, they say it's the toughest position in sports. There's so many things you're looking at with little windows opening and closing, people trying to take your head off. What's the one thing? And there is no one thing, actually. It's probably a bad question. I'll ask better questions when you're in the studio, I promise. But is there one thing that every quarterback needs to have?
That's a great question. There is probably more than one, but I do think accuracy is an underrated element of quarterbacking that at the NFL level, maybe not at other levels, but at the NFL level, if you're not accurate throwing the football, it's going to be tough for you to succeed on a week in and week out basis. And the other thing about accuracy is it's difficult to teach. I think it's something that when you're drafting a player, either they are accurate or they aren't. But to think that suddenly they're going to come to your team and you're going to have them become accurate over time, I just haven't seen that happen very often. So it's hard to teach. You either have it or you don't. But someone like Drew Brees, when you have that kind of accuracy, there's a reason he's played 20 years. And I do think that's a key trait.
All right. Bonus question, actually. I've got one more. What did you think of Cam Newton signing with New England?
Well, I think it'll be interesting when you look at, you know, what Coach Belichick has done, bringing in players in a unique situation for many years. He's done this with players, and it's always seemed to work out. You know, he rarely has a player who comes in and had success somewhere else and then comes in and struggles in New England. So I would think it's a good situation for Cam, you know, to go to an organization that really has a plan, has a way to win, and they can plug him in. And it's only a one-year contract. So if it works out really well and they have a lot of success, Cam will be in a great position to see where his next step could be. But it's a fascinating, you know, story to follow this year is his role in New England and how they win. And it was going to be fascinating regardless of who was there because of Tom leaving. But I'm excited to see how it works out with Cam or Brian Hoyer or whoever they play or how they mix them in. I don't know, but I know Coach Belichick will have a plan, and it may not be what everyone thinks.
All right. That last question was just to test you and try you out as an analyst. You passed. So thank you very much.
I got a ways to go. It's like when I was learning how to play quarterback, I got a ways to go, but I look forward to it someday.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Give my best to the family. Give my best to Julie. Have I said hello? Great stuff there from Kirk Cousins. Time now to bring in producer Gary Hayes. Gary, no mailbag this week because I need to take this time at the end of the podcast to check how you're doing on American football phrases.
Yeah, you were getting grouchy with me last week, right? When I did some tweets that you said, what the hell does this mean?
Well, yeah, you control a lot of the tweets from the NR podcasts, and you were talking about how we sacked the MVP and managed to get Lamar Jackson. And I suggested you might want to use the word tackle, and you said aren't tackle and sack the same thing?
They are though, right?
Well, a sack is a tackle behind the line of scrimmage, but a tackle can also be 30 yards downfield. Then it's not a sack. You got me?
Right. Okay. I thought that any tackle of a quarterback was like, oh, they sacked him. They got him.
No, that's right. So yes, a sack is if a quarterback is dropping back to pass and he gets tackled. If Lamar Jackson runs 40 yards downfield and we get him, that's a tackle. Got it?
Right. Okay. I'm starting to understand this now.
Good. Do you know what a fumble is?
When someone drops the ball.
What, drops a pass or drops it when they're running with it?
They drop it when they're running with it.
Yes. Good, yes. Good man. Yes. What about Hail Mary?
Oh, that's an easy... Everyone knows that. Bruce Springsteen sung about that in the Super Bowl when 2009, was it? He says he'll throw that Hail Mary past you on glory days. That's where they get it from one end zone to the other end zone, right?
Why are they throwing a Hail Mary?
because it's a last ditch attempt to try getting something from the game.
Yes, that's why, because you offer up a Hail Mary. You offer up a Hail Mary. That's why it's called it. So you're not too bad.
I'm not too bad.
It's just when you take to social media.
I think my mind goes blank and I get sweaty palms and fingertips.
Because you know the WhatsApp message from me is coming at any second.
I can feel you breathing down my neck.
Well, I'll let you off this once. You probably get three do-overs during the season.
I must say as well, just in case anyone ever sees our tweets and then they suddenly disappear, one, it means Neil's reprimanded me, but two, if it ever says anything stupid, it's probably me. It's not Neil. Neil hasn't lost his mind and he's talking in British terms. It's just me being a Brit, not quite getting American football.
That's a good disclaimer to have for the rest of the season. So my thanks to producer Gary, as always, great job. My thanks to Kirk Cousins, and thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends. We're weekly now, of course, during the 2020 NFL season. Go on to iTunes, give us a good rating and a nice message. We'll see you next week. Bye for now. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds. Our producer is Gary Hayes, while Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. Special thanks to junior producer Henry Smith and everyone else involved in helping us put this episode together. The Neil Reynolds Podcast is a Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.